Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? How y'all doing? The camera's moving around all crazy and wild.
Trying stuff out. Figuring it out.
We're here. We're back. It's Monday. You're hearing this probably on Thursday, unless you're watching on the live stream. Welcome to the show. We're talking modern. We have some really exciting stuff to do today. Big shout out to Michael Grothy, producer, sitting in the room.
Woo!
What's up, Mike?
Hey, everyone.
How's it going?
You should say it louder. Like, scream
hey,
hello.
Everyone.
There we go. That was Mike. He was the one that moved the camera during the pack war. If you guys are just tuning in to the recorded stream, every week we do the live stream at the beginning of the week, either Monday or Tuesday. When we do that, we start the episode with a pack war that you can either win packs by being a listener, who one of us will be pack warring for, or by being a Patreon member, which the other one will be battling
when
for
he says
last
a,
week.
When he says a listener, he means a streamer, somebody watching us live on stream.
Correct.
And then also the patron. So if you're both a patron and a streamer, then you're entered to win. We have this Arid Mesa here was just given away. We just gave it away on the show.
Yep.
So that's exciting. And we'll be doing that every week because that grimoire is full of sweet packs. It's brought to you by Wizardry Foundry.
Yeah, today we opened up a Modern Masters 3 and we opened up two packs to balance it out of Fallen Empires.
Yes.
So weird packs are in there. Don't you worry. It is, you know, get on the Patreon, get on the live stream, make sure to subscribe on YouTube to be able to do so. And yeah, super exciting. Last week, the Patreon got it. This week, someone on the live stream got it.
Speaking of the YouTube, it's been a very, very exciting road for us. We launched it about 6 weeks ago or just over. And we've been getting a good number of subscribers every week, which has been really cool for us. It's been fun to have a new place to interact. So check that out. If you haven't subscribed already, if you're listening to this, there is really exciting stuff coming in the pipeline for us, guys. Like really big opportunities to expand, get bigger guests, do more giveaways. And to do that, we really do need your support on the YouTube there. So just go to the MMCast YouTube, subscribe, become a member of that, and it'll keep us doing here what we're doing. So,
correct.
Today on the show, we are going to be talking about counterfeits.
Yes.
The mostly cons, some of the pros that people have championed for that we want to discuss,
mm-hmm.
the reserve list, and kind of the future of Magic Finance in that sense. How is Magic Finance going to survive, right? The stability of the game, all of those things. So that's today's conversation.
Yeah, so we'll get to where that came from in a second. And the last kind of big shout-out before we get fully into the episode is right now we are in the second-to-last week of our Kickstarter for our game Battle Bosses. It's a cool game. Here is Captain Boat. I can show it to you on camera. He comes with the pirate minions. We worked really hard over the last 2 years to make this game. You know, we are hitting the final stretches. As we hit the final stretches, we need your guys' help to make it happen. If you can check it out, it's Battle Bosses on Kickstarter. This game is really fun. Every single review that's gotten a handle of it has said that they love the game. You guys will love it too. Please check it out. It supports the podcast. It supports me. It supports us. And we really appreciate your guys' help. Just check it out. Donate. It's $30 for the tier that you get two bosses, or you can do the $121 that comes with all of them plus a bunch of other extra features. And we really, really, really appreciate it. From the depths of my heart, we've been, you know, working really hard on this game, and we're excited for you guys to try it out.
It's a super sweet game. I endorse it fully, not just as an employee of Kesco, but as somebody who plays games and enjoys it.
Yeah, he keeps coming back. He's like, I want to play Battle Bosses every
I enjoy
morning.
One.
And we're like, you have to do work.
Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Set up the camera. Write the episode outline. I'm the one that writes the episode outlines. All right. So why are we... Why are we talking about this?
Well, there's a number of different articles that have come out recently. So Saffron Olive is prolific when it comes to writing interesting articles about the state of modern. One article recently suggested that the average price of a top-tier modern deck had gone up 26% since the beginning of the year. Now, that article paired with the conversation of counterfeits getting better and better and better, Generation 7 being what people are talking about right now, which is the sort of newest gen of counterfeits,
mm-hmm.
That they aren't just focusing on old reserve list cards anymore. They're actually focusing on like hologram-laden modern staples. Like it's
right.
A thing you can buy now. It's not just old stuff. It's not $1,000 cards. It's $40 cards and $60 cards. And it's because there has been a lack of modern staple reprints readily available in these reprint sets. Masters 25 and Iconic Masters.
I don't know if it's because of that. I think that anytime there's a commodity that's worth money, there's going to be people out. I mean, like one there's going to be people out there making counterfeit products of it. I mean, even in the world of the toys that we're making, you know, we launched a spring summer toy line this last year, and we already have counterfeits on the market of the toys that we're making. So, like, I think counterfeiting in general is something that happens whenever you have something of any value.
I don't mean that the reason the counterfeits are happening exclusively is because of the lack of reprints in those sets, but I think the lack of reprints in the sets has the community up in arms about the cards, and there's a high demand for them for that reason. So not only are the people that are making the counterfeits making a tremendous amount of money on these things, but the people that want to acquire the cards are having to search for other means because they can't afford the market that's out there currently.
I don't think that's even fair. Like, they're not being forced to do anything. Like, you coming
that's fair.
Out, and we'll get into that in a second. I mean, one of the reasons this became such a hot topic is, A, because a new generation of these have come out. There are now Reddit groups and Facebook groups designated towards creating these counterfeits. There, you know, during the GP, there were a few people that were DQ'd because they had just, like, without knowing, they bought 4 Cavernous Souls that were counterfeits, and they, like, had no idea that that's what they were getting stuck with, and they, you know, were DQ'd or kicked out of the tournament because of that. And, you know, it's becoming a really hot button issue. This goes on the same side as, you know, we modern prices have gone up. Now, I do think the, like, since the beginning of the year, modern has gone up 15% or whatever is a semi-unfair statistic, partly just because that's true every year, because at the beginning of the year in January and December is modern's darkest, like, is its lowest point. We're 4 months out of the PT or the PPTQ season where modern is the format. We're in a new standard environment where rotation just happened. On top of that, the rotation, the environment we're having is exciting because it's normally a new set or block, so people are excited about that. Christmas is also the lowest point in Magic prices over the year. Every year, in general, people aren't buying Magic cards because Magic cards, especially Magic singles, because Magic singles do not make good Christmas gifts. Because I don't know about you guys, but my mom has absolutely zero idea on which Magic staple she should be buying me. In fact, we've argued on the podcast that I think moving Commander to the summer is a great mistake because they were the best possible Magic Christmas gift I've ever received. Because it's really easy to understand how to buy that, and that's no longer a thing. But yeah, so I think that there's just, you know, the looking at the beginning of the year as a point of, like, modern has increased since then. All of Magic has increased since then. You know, since the beginning of that season, there's been 2 modern Pro Tours. There's been we're in the middle of a modern PPTQ season. There has been, you know, just in general, card prices have gone up because that's what happens every year.
I think so. There's a couple points that are introduced in this article, and I highly recommend reading it. It's a great article.
Yeah, it's linked in the episode show notes. Everywhere there's show notes for this episode.
I think
don't read it while driving, podcast listeners.
What's important is that he points out right at the beginning, it's obvious to him that counterfeits are not good for the game, right? He's saying, like, that's clear. And I think it's obvious to all of us, to any of us in this room, anybody who is deeply invested in Magic's history, competitive play, content creation, where the history and credibility of the game is so important to us. Obviously, I don't want fake Magic cards running around. It's not the way Magic's intended to be played or distributed.
I don't know if I agree that everyone of sound mind.
Really?
Yeah, like the other reason we are doing this episode today is because over the weekend, someone wrote a very long and in-depth post. We won't shout out names, but you can check it out on the Facebook group.
It's on the Masters of Honor Facebook group, which you just go and sign up. It's like got like 300 comments. Yeah. You'd probably find it pretty fast.
And basically his point was like, you know, all this conversation of counterfeits, screw everyone else. This is what we should be making. You know, it's Wizards' fault because they're not making cards cheap enough, and therefore I'm going to be counterfeiting the game as much as I possibly can. And in that thread, you know, I would say that 80% of people are on the side of, like, this is wrong, this is incorrect, here are the reasons this is incorrect. But there's at least a 20% part of the group who's arguing that, you know, this is Wizards' fault. They're the reason that these cards are so expensive, and because they can't reprint cards in a manner that is timely enough for me, I'm going to counterfeit them. And it is not only a very short-sighted way of looking at kind of what's happening here, but also a kind of misunderstanding of why Magic is as good as it is and succeeds in the way it does, as well as why Magic prices are as expensive as they are. You know, there's a reason why the reprint policy is it being paced as the way it is. And obviously there were some missteps where they printed 2 sets in a row that had pretty medium-sized reprints. But in that same year, they had Magic 19 reprinted 2 of the most expensive cards in the format. And you had Battle Bond reprinting expensive cards. And yes, some of the cards that were reprinted those other sets were problematic, but they were still good reprints in both of those sets. They just were underbought because we have gone into a draft fatigue that's just been happening because they've been releasing draft formats every 3 months. Or every 3 months on top of the standard release cycle.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't... There's not an easy fix for this problem. That's the point, right? That's the point that has been suggested here, is that if there was an easy snap your fingers way to make everybody happy, it would be done by now. There obviously isn't. And, you know,
I mean, the problem of counterfeiters is, you know, you go after every single one of them and the community makes a promise together to not buy them. But if you're talking about there's not an easy fix to the cost of modern as a format.
The whole entire conversation. It's not like what you're saying is. Right. There's a lot of people that are sound mind that don't believe necessarily that counterfeits are the worst thing for the game. There is a sect of our community that believes that. And if that's the case, there truly is not an easy fix, because that means going after the counterfeiters. I mean, this feels in some ways similar to like when Napster first came out, and it was like, okay, we can try to persecute all of these people who want to distribute this music for free. But eventually it was like more and more people figured out how to distribute the music for free. And those people in Metallica who persecuted Napster in the first place kind of ended up looking bad. So it's like, if Wizards is not going to make the cards more accessible to those people who can't afford them.
But there's a fundamental difference between those two things, because right now you can go play other Magic, other card games. Like as a CCG or a TCG that's out there are not only hundreds, but thousands of card games you can go play.
Yep.
But Magic will not be produced if the community supports Fix. Magic will go under, or will become a purely
Digital
game, which I don't think any person is looking for it to do, and I don't even think it wins in that space. If it's Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro versus Blizzard and Hearthstone going neck and neck against each other, the only thing that Wizards has going for it is the fact that they are also the paper game that people love and is one of the best games ever created, and this would physically kill the game.
Totally agree. So I to make it absolutely clear, I'm not arguing for any of the benefits of counterfeits. I'm trying to play devil's advocate to understand it, I am confused why there would be so many people who I feel like understand this economy and this game that seem to be in support of some version of counterfeits. So I had a train of thought. Oh yes, this is it. You and I always compare Magic to golf, right? It's in the sense that it's a more expensive game. Mm-hmm. It takes some upfront cost, and it's a little slow, but if you understand it, it's a brilliant, wonderful game. Well, if I could fashion my own golf club or buy a knockoff cheap golf club, I can still play golf. There isn't only one maker of golf clubs. So in that sense, if you're comparing it to the expensive gentleman's game in that sense, it's not the same thing, right? Like you are beholden to this one company to buy the cards. If you can't get it from...
No, you can play Yu-Gi-Oh! You can go play Pokemon. You can go play
Legend of the Five Rings?
Legend of the Five Rings.
Okay, sure, but I can play soccer, I can play baseball. If I want to play golf, which is a unique product, I can get my golf clubs and my golf balls from a million places. I can only get my Magic cards from one maker. There's the difference. So if that one maker is intrinsically destroying some amount of like the accessibility to the game by the way they're printing these cards.
Well, but that's like, I disagree on the fundamental, because you can go play Standard. You can go play Draft. You can go play Commander. You can go play Limited. You don't have to play Modern. Like, like the Modern gameplay is me playing golf at the Riviera Country Club one of the nicest golf courses on the planet. That's what Modern is. I mean, Legacy is more that, and the Modern is the mid-tier of that. But you can go to a three-part course anytime you want, which is Standard. You can go play with bad golf clubs, and you can go play Standard. You also don't have to play in the Pro Tour. You don't have to play at GPs. All things that if you're trying to compete at that level, because you can go to a Modern tournament tomorrow. Actually, the best example of what you just described is me going and playing Mono Green Stompy in a Modern tournament. That's totally available and is a less than $100 deck for you right now.
Totally.
But if you want to win at golf and if you want to win at Magic, you need to be investing into the more expensive products available to you to get your game to the next level. And if you want to go lose at a golf tournament, go ahead.
So what do you think Wizards' response should be to the counterfeit problem that we currently have?
I think the community response needs to be a total outcry against anyone using counterfeits, period. I think Wizards' response is what they're doing, which is going after counterfeiters. You know, it's not the responsibility of ourselves to do that. You know, we need to keep on the lookout. We need to let people know that are in the community that when they are proposing that counterfeits are okay for different reasons, that they're not. The same way that happened with cheaters back in the day.
Yep.
The same way that you do that with other problems within the community that has happened over the last 2 years. And counterfeiters in that same space. And I would say anyone who is avidly arguing for counterfeits as a positive thing for the community is comparable to someone arguing that it's okay to cheat.
I would agree. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I don't think there's any. I don't think that counterfeits are in any way defensible.
Let's walk quickly through like what happens if the market is flooded. Magic is worth $10.
Yep.
You can buy any Magic deck you want for $10 because you're just paying for the actual cardboard it's printed on. Counterfeits are everywhere, or Wizards just floods the market with those cards. And, I mean, the first thing is, I want to say, and this is a low estimate, 60% of card stores just go out of business tomorrow. Not only
Sorry,
that,
say that a little slower.
60% of card stores and local gaming stores go out of business tomorrow. Not to mention 100, not 100%, but 80% of content creators go away. You have fan, like we would survive because we're not really making a ton of money off of the sale of Magic product, but 90% of all of the articles you read, pro players interacting with it. And if you want to look what this looks like, go look at Pokemon. There's two paywall-based sites that make actual competitive Pokemon content, and everything else is fan-made, you know, D-grade content
is
compared
because,
to Magic stuff.
Is that because Pokemon has a massive counterfeit problem?
It's because a Pokemon secondary market doesn't exist.
Got
like the reason that Magic has more than Hearthstone, more than Overwatch, more than pretty much any other content game out there, more like content online. I can go to 60 different A-class websites that are creating content for me every single day. That exists because of the secondary market. That goes away tomorrow.
Well, that's why it's such a unique product, right? I mean, the secondary market is what defines Magic as a long-term game. It's something that none of the other games really have. It's also why Magic gets to be the long-term investment that it is.
Right.
And we're going to talk about the reserve list in a second, the pros and cons, because, again, it's sort of part of it. So one of the things that I think, you know, stepping back for a second, that when you're talking about flooding the market and what happens, you have to differentiate here between two different subjects. One of them is Modern, which... we know that Wizards has total ability to reprint cards to a point, right? On the other hand, Commander, Legacy, just collectors, that's a whole different market. It's not, there's no accessible way to reprint those old cards, especially the ones on the reserve list, ones that are of a high power level. So what I'm trying to figure out, what I'm curious about is, mm-hmm. So should we just define what the reserve list is really quickly
for those that don't know?
The reserve list is a list of Magic cards that was originally introduced back in 1996 by Wizards of the Coast. It was in response to the printing of Chronicles, which was the first major reprint set that existed. And Chronicles took a lot of cards from Legends and a lot of the older cards from those first sets, whiteboarded them, made them readily available, and in one printing, almost completely tanked Magic. It's the earliest example of the community crying out and saying, you know what, I invested all this money in these dual lands and all these expensive cards. Who am I to know that you're not going to just reprint Black Lotus in the next one of these sets? So Wizards came out and they said, this is a list of cards we will never reprint. It was updated again in 02, and then finally, the last time, just in the last few years, because originally you could reprint some of those reserve list cards in foil and judge program reprints, they've now eliminated that completely. So the full list now is totally protected. No supplemental
products.
There was
a loophole. I mean, the everyone's like, oh, we should get rid of the reserve list, and they don't understand why it exists and why Wizards can't go back to policy. I don't know where to find this, but someone wrote a really in-depth breakdown on Facebook, and maybe Michael will link to it in the chat because I think he's the one who told me about it, if he can find it. But basically, the idea is just calculating, because we know how many Underground Seas are in the world. We know. And if you calculated the total value of Underground Seas, it is much more... worth much, much, much more than the entire value of Hasbro, the corporation. And if you look at the class action lawsuit that just making Underground Seas being able to be reprinted, not the rest of the reserve list, that
yeah.
could be putting Hasbro up for, it would put them out of business tomorrow. And so if you calculate all 10 dual lands, the power 9,
yeah.
everything else
yeah,
on the reserve
crazy.
List, like it, the argument of they should get rid of it, it would be better, is something that they physically can't do.
Not only that, but that's a fallacy. It's incorrect. There's a part of Magic, again, when we talk about the secondary market and why it's so important to the game, the whole entire concept of Magic the Gathering, it's like, compare it to any other collectible, right? Like, you have to have the original part of that collectible be respected. Otherwise, the heritage of this thing that is so special becomes diluted and it ceases to be what it is. Magic having that history, Magic having those first few years of cards that are like the Babe Ruth rookie mm-hmm. cards, the Action Comics number ones, it's why it gets to be on par with things like comic books and like coin collecting and like these classic things
right.
where there is actually a history to it.
A Black Lotus selling for $90,000 is a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, totally. And that's it's like if you want to be able to play with classic cards, play Magic Online. You can play with Black Lotus on Magic Online. You can do it. You can do that. It doesn't cost you 90 grand.
It costs like, you $200?
Yeah, it's possible. You can if you want to play it in a cube at home. buy from the proxy guy, one of these places that is clearly not for sale.
Yeah, the issue, and we've had a few people mention this in the chat, and we'll eventually go through this, is what's the difference between someone writing the words Ugin on the back of a card and putting it in a card sleeve and playing with friends versus doing a proxy thing that you're going to tournament? There's two issues with it. The first one, and we've said this on the podcast, don't buy a modern deck until you've tested it with proxies. Like, print out bad cardboard, you know, or write them out on cards, try a deck out, because it is an investment to buy into it, and practicing with those cards with proxies is fine. The issue becomes when you're going to a tournament, the issue becomes when you're trying to sell those cards off as real cards. And there's two levels of that issue. One is it destroys all faith within the economy of the business, which puts people in a position where they get DQ'd from tournaments for for Cavern Souls being, you know, fake cards in their thing. Make cool looking different versions of cards to play with casually. Fine. Not trying to dissuade you from doing that. What we're dissuading people from doing is looking to actually make tournament looking legal cards to try and get past that barrier to entry, when the cost of doing that is to be a part of the Magic community.
If you write a Sharpie on the back of your card to practice it, you're not profiting from that. So it's right. Different. If you're selling something and passing it off as a real good, you're profiting from it. That's, I mean, you are creating value from nothing, which is not something that you're really able to do in the world unless you discover a commodity. So a fake thing is not a commodity. I suppose to the people that are making it, it seems that way, but I agree with you. It kills Magic long-term if...
Well, so I mean, like, okay, so we were at the first two steps. All of content creation dies that's not from Wizards of the Coast or from fan sites. All 60% of stores that aren't limited focus or at least have Magic casually on the side. So, like, your local board game store will survive because they're going to sell the board games they do and they'll just have their, like, once-a-week draft of Magic. So those two things go away. With those gone, Wizards of the Coast loses a significant amount of their development team, a significant amount of their production team. The art goes down the drain because they can't afford to do different art for every card, and the amount of products released every year goes down from the once a month that we currently have to four at best. And at that point, does Wizards just make the decision, you know, we're no longer one of these profitable divisions of Hasbro, why are we making, you know, going through the effort to even have this size of team, and why don't we just go to a full digital product?
And on top of that,
and then the community around Magic dies.
And on top of that, all of the old investments and all the Magic cards that you spent money on tank. Like, you...
Well, I'm not even getting into the subject matter of the amount of people that have now invested their money and time in the Magic who lose their life savings, they lose their time, they lose their business, they lose... Or even just the fact that they've lost all the money they spent on the game. And you buying counterfeits is directly, basically stealing from those people. Your friends who have also played this game with you. Because you decided you needed to be able to play this $1,500 deck versus this $300 deck.
Now, this gets into the next part of the conversation.
I'm adding, so the conversation we talked about with Michael, the article about someone breaking down like the value of the reserved list and different pieces of that. I'm linking to it in the show notes. You can't share it in the Facebook chat. So it will be in the show notes for the episode, everywhere the episode is posted.
Michael, can you, as our producer today, just make a note to remind Alex to get that to me, because I'll be putting this episode up and I need to have
it. It'll be in the episode description for the live stream. You just copy and paste and put it everywhere.
Perfect. Okay, great. So now we describe what the reserve list is, right? So there's 600 cards. I don't know the exact number, but it's not a lot. And the cards only go up through like 1999, maybe. I think like Urza's Legacy, Urza's Saga, those are like the last couple sets. I don't even think Urza's Destiny has a card on the reserve list. Maybe it does. Maybe Powder Keg is on the reserve list. So
Powder Keg is Saga, but Young Man Hollow is a Destiny card that's on there.
I think Powder Keg is also Destiny. Pretty sure it is. But yeah, that's, so it goes through the Urza's block. That's it. I don't think there's a single Mercadian Masks card on the reserve list, or if there is. So it's basically done before the turn of the century. We're almost 20 years removed from this reserve list. So there's a couple things to point out that are going on right now in Magic Finance. One of them is the fact that the reserve list is now becoming a commodity in itself, in a way that it never was before. Like, there used to be Black Lotus and the Moxes and your Underground Seeds and, you know, your various cards that had really high value. And then there was a breakdown into the secondary stuff on the reserve list that had some value, like... Take like cards like a card like Palancron, maybe, or something that was like playable in Commander. People wanted to have the card that was maybe a little, you know, a little above average. But what you're seeing now is even things that for years and years and years, rares from Visions or Mirage that were 40 cents or a dollar, they're spiking to $4, $5, $10, $15. And it's happening every single day. So what it's finally really reminding us of is the fact that this old part of Magic is a collectible. It's not just a game. It's commons from Arabian Nights that are $30, $50, $100. Mm-hmm. people want to own this part of history. And every single week and every single month, as there become more and more players that are getting into Magic the Gathering, that are learning the game and becoming fans of the game, those old cards get more and more valuable. And the divide between stuff that can be reprinted and stuff that can't be gets wider and wider. So we're really dealing with systemically two problems, because one of them is sort of fixable by Wizards. If Wizards wanted to find a way, they can make modern cards more accessible. They can be creative. They can do whatever they want. They can tank the market if they want to.
I would argue three things. One, Wizards tanking the market would be bad for Magic. I've kind of explained why.
But they are legally able to print those cards in Oblivion if they want to, is my point. If they want.
Correct. Though there's arguments that the letter of the promise of what the reserve list is about is that Wizards has promised to not tank the market ever. Like, that's what Wizards doesn't ever want to do. And yes, those exact cards are what's on the actual law. But if Wizards started printing policy that just was like, oh, any card that's expensive, we're going to print into the ground every day, that becomes problematic for Magic in general as well. But the other issue that you run into, or not even issue that you run into, is the statement that Wizards isn't doing a lot to reprint cards, I think, is just a fallacy. Now, if you look at this breakdown, you know, look at what they did with Tarmogoyf. Look at what they did with other cards. Now, there's some cards that they need to print more of, and I actually agree. The chat brings up that just one of the problems I think that Wizards has is that when they released Modern Masters 1, it was released at a $7 SRP, and then every single retailer on the planet just started selling it out of the box at $10 to $15. And so they realized, why would we just leave those dollars on the floor? The next packs are worth 10. I think we've gotten to the point where they need to bring it back down to 7. I think $7 for a pack, that means for $21 you could do a draft. You can pay for your draft pod of a master set. Brings those packs and the values of those packs down to a more realistic price point.
As opposed to right now they're 10?
Right now they're 10 to 12. Michael, person who ran a store, master's packs are about retail at 10.
But like, for instance, like when we were there doing these chaos drafts at the GP, I was buying packs of Iconic and Masters 25 for $8 because they were not as heavily in demand.
Correct, because they no longer people are like, oh man, I really need these. And I think the other thing is, and maybe Wizards focusing a little bit more of adding more value to each of these packs. Part of the problem, though, is sometimes Wizards does put value into these packs, but as soon as they print them, they tank. Like, you have you just have these commons and uncommons that are worth a lot of money because they haven't been available for 10 years. But as soon as you reprint them, they're no longer the supply-demand issue that there was, and they go back to being worth nothing.
Right. Urza's Bauble goes from being $50 to $4.
Right. And so, like, in that environment, when you look at the packs now, the value of that pack is not super high, but that's because they printed this pack and these cards are no longer worth a ton. That's also true of a lot of the commander staples they printed through this, which is kind of the issue, is that they focused a little bit more on too many casual products than they necessarily have on competitive products. But it's not like they haven't made a focus to kind of start reprinting this, as you can see with Scapeshift, as you can see with... For me,
the big one is, if you look at Modern, I think you have a list of the 20 or so most played or most expensive cards, right?
Mm-hmm. There's only one card on this entire list that hasn't seen any actual reprint, excluding not Treasures.
Expeditions?
Not Expeditions. There's an overall King card. Master Mises. There's one card that was reprinted as a masterpiece, but otherwise every single card here has been reprinted other than Through the Breach.
Is the top card on the list that card?
No, top card on the list is Mox Opal.
And that's never seen a reprinting, has
it? It was M15. Modern Masters M15. It was one of the mythics. And then I am absolutely sure. Really? I have a copy of that card.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that Mox Opal was back in Modern Masters 2.
Modern Masters 2, Mox Opal was one of the cards in it.
So you can buy those blue cardboard package packs and they have Mox Opals in them?
Correct.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, there's six of them in there.
Lilliana of the Veil was printed in MM17. Engineered Explosives is really high right now, and that was printed. The last time that was printed was MM13. There's also been promos of all of these. There's an MPS promo of Mox Opal and Engineered Explosives. Lilliana of the Veil was the promo for the RPTQ. But so the only card that Through the Breach is currently at, and it's the only one without a printing. And to be totally honest, if they printed Through the Breach in a MM17, it would, or MM19, it would probably tank.
Yep.
It's played in one deck, two decks really. It like probably won't go down to nothing, but it'll go down the same way Scapeshift, and it'll become a $20 to $25 card.
Scapeshift is like $10
versus
bucks
the currently $52 price tag. And yeah, I mean, some of these are new, you know, Vengevine spiked, but Vengevine, and that's the other thing, is there's cards on this list that are cards that,
of course,
it's impossible for Wizards to predict that Vengevine is going to become a thing again.
To anticipate it, yeah. And
when they did anticipate it, Jace the Mind Sculptor, for example, Jace would be way more than the $84 it is right now if they didn't print it into, M25.
Yeah.
Because just, he was a $100 card before that set was printed when Modern was being banned in Modern.
Yeah.
Like,
and the highest he ever got to was like 200, I think, at one point.
During Mod 250.
Yeah.
Was at one point, I think, the highest, the Crazy. Top end. When I was buying into Miracles.
If you look at this top, so read off the list first to last. Just read it in order. Here you go.
First to last or last to first? I think last to first is more interesting.
Sure. Last to first.
Tauntauns. Number 25 is Arid Mesa at $41. It was at its peak 60. Marsh Flats, 41, peak 55. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, the only standard card here, 43. Misty Rainforest was 47.
You missed Ravager there.
Oh, I did. Ravager was 47. Misty Rainforest after that is at 47 as well. Blackleaf Cliffs is at 48. Ugin the Spirit Dragon at 48. Leyline of the Void at 50. That just peaked. Vengevine at 50 as well. Chalice of the Void at 51. Through the Breach at 52. Verdant Catacombs at 53. Celestial Colonnade at 55. Horizon Canopy at 60. Dark Confidant at 63. Tarmogoyf at 68. Snapcaster Mage at 71.
Scalding Tarn
at 80, Noble Hierarch at 80, Jace the Mind Sculptor at 84, Cavern of Souls at 85, Karn Liberated at 95, Engineer Explosives at 95, Liliana the Veil at 97, and Mox Opal at 104. And there's a few things to take a note here. One is, if you were, there's a lot of cards on this list that you had ample opportunity, if you've been playing Modern for any extended period of time, that you could buy in pretty easily at one point or other. Noble Hierarch was at $20, I think, at its bottom. I wish he had the bottom here. I think that actually would have been really interesting to see. Same as Leyline, Vengevine, Chalice. All of the fetch lands were at $10 when Modern Masters 2 came out. 3 came out.
It would be interesting if one of these third party retailers, like a Channel Fireball or a Star City, one of the ones that has enough capital and stock, if they had like some sort of like credit or payment program on the cards, where you would like buy a deck at a certain price and like make payments on the deck. Now, obviously, it's problematic because like the price of the deck would change and go down, and the cards would go up or down. So like you have to lock in the price.
They're like things that are illegal in real finance that are in that level.
Oh, really?
They're like, you'd have to like be careful because every piece of it's so volatile that like, and like what happens if I borrow, I do the lending program with the deck and then Wizards reprints that card into the ground.
Yeah.
Like what if I like invested or like, you know, borrowed against a Scapeshift deck.
Yep.
And the most expensive card in that deck at that point was Scapeshift. And that card is now worth $10. So do I still have to pay Channel Fireball back for the Scapeshift?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the thing, is if they made it available, you'd lock in the prices. But
then Channel Fireball is like a securities company, and then they have to deal with the lawsuit. Like,
Okay. It's fair. It's a fair point.
Dangerous space to play in. I think rental companies do exist, though. There are many companies out there that let you rent decks for a tournament. If you like need to play Jund at the next tournament and you don't want to buy Liliana's and Tarmogoyf, so you can go to one of these websites and lease the deck from them for a weekend.
Yeah, I remember talking about starting that business with John Van Druten years ago. Never did it, though.
Yeah.
But talking about that list, I think there are certain cards on there that are going to be harder to find ways to reprint. For me, the easiest thing, they have to find a way.
That was the reason they brought Corsets back, is because they ran into the problem of reprinting cards into Standard, because every Standard set needed to be on Flavor. And Inquisition of Kozluck is the best example of it, where it was literally in the design file until the moment they realized that not one Eldrazi focused card didn't have Devoid, just as a rule for the set. And so they're like, now, should Wizards be as sticklery on those issues? I personally don't think so, but I understand why they are, and it's respectable to do that. But now that Corsets are back, they can reprint Inquisition of Kozluck anytime they want.
Yeah. So I guess one of the things I'm wondering about is, of the cards on this list, of these top 25 Modern cards, because we are a Modern show, so obviously...
And that list was provided by Jim Casal.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, there's...
At Frost _ on Twitter.
The reserve list part of this conversation and those spiking prices, it's not really a conversation that's necessary on this show, because that's a kind of a Magic Finance conversation, and none of those cards are Modern legal. The reserve list cards?
Oh, reserve list, sure.
Whereas the modern conversation is a lot more relevant. So the easiest cycle on that list that reduces the price of modern on the whole is the fetch lands. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's to me, you know, finding a way to reprint Mox Opal is a big one, but like that's a single reprint in a single set. Finding a way to keep the total value of the fetch lands lower, like, because right now the range is basically 40 to 80. I think Misty's the cheapest.
Could they reprint the fetch lands in Ravnica?
I mean, I can do whatever they want. It doesn't.
Well, no, but I mean, like, on a flavor perspective.
They couldn't do it probably because the shock lands are coming back.
And also, fetch lands aren't good for. Well, they did it in cons. They're not terrible for gold environments. I think they're bad with check lands.
You don't
though.
Want okay. fetches and shocks in the same.
There aren't. I'm saying instead.
Instead of shocks?
Yeah. Is that like an interesting play that they could do? Because they're like related to each other intrinsically, but not through flavor, but through the history of Magic. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're getting shocks. But I think like that's the point. Like fetches aren't going to be printed in standard anytime soon then. We have at least 2 years until fetches are printed in standard. And maybe that's one of the reasons they spike so hard. That's the other thing is there's expectations of what Wizards was right. going to do. And cards will deviate their prices based on those expectations. For instance, shocks went down in price as soon as Return to Ravnica the second happened. And right. it happened when the first Return to Ravnica happened. They were $50 cards and they went down to $30 cards overnight as soon as they were like, we're going back to Ravnica. And that was just the buy price. The sell price was tanked to $6. I remember selling $6, what's the red, white Shockland?
Sacred Foundries.
Yeah. When they were like, I could buy them from them would cost me $40 because they were just expecting them to be printed to the ground. Yep. So those expectations can affect the cost of cards.
Majorly, yeah. So that kind of covers the reserve list. It covers the expectation for modern reprints, why we think they're expensive.
And I want to go next to the chat and read some of the things that they were saying, especially about counterfeiting and kind of go through the different arguments that they have.
Before we get into that, I do want to just do a couple quick shout outs.
Yes, definitely.
I want to remind everybody here, guys, we mentioned it earlier in the show, patreon.com/themmcast is how you can help support the show. Every week we're going to be giving away stuff. So like this Arid Mesa here that we're giving away was opened in a pack war that is a part of the live stream. So if you tune into the show when we go live every week, one of the winners, either the live stream or the Patreon, will win those cards as well, complete with a free grimoire we're giving away, which is the cool box that we opened it in, made by Wizardry Foundry. So check out patreon.com/themmcast. Another thing that I would like to announce is that I'm going to be starting streaming Modo very soon. I announced my username yesterday for Twitch, which is Ben Bateman Streaming. So go follow that. You'll get your first notification of me going live in the next week or two here. But I'm very close to starting that up. So check that out. We mentioned Battle Bosses. And I think for now, those are the major shout-outs. So let's go to the chat.
All right. Let me bring up Jim Casal's thing really quick because I want to see something cool. Chat.
Chat.
And the play slide did a weird issue. If I sit down, this is from Aaron High. A weird issue. If I sit down in a commander game with a land that has Ugin written on it and no one bats an eye, but I printed it on my blank card, playing card to make it look real, that's somehow fraudulent. And the difference between these, which we explained, is basically that you run into the issue of tricking people into buying cards that they think are real but are not. And that builds a distrust within the market of Magic, which is what begins this process. It starts out as people getting ripped off and cheated, and then they feel bad, and then they stop playing Magic, and or the confidence of people being willing to pay for cards tanks the price of cards, then killing these things that we discussed.
Yeah, on top of that, guys, to point out really quick with the counterfeits, as pointed out in this article, the counterfeits get better and better every week, but still currently, if you hold the card in your hand and you know what a Magic card feels like, you will be able to tell that the card feels weird or fake. So it's really a question of inside a sleeve, inside a deck, in a game, it's very hard to spot them. Right. That's the problem with them is that they're good enough that if they're sleeved up and you're playing them in a tournament, they're pretty hard to get.
Personally, counterfeits I think are fine as long as it's not a competitive event, because for Cube and Commander it saves money because people don't want to buy $80 cards when you need 100 of them.
If they are actually like made available as like this is a counterfeit, like this is an alt art card that I made, it says on the back not for sale, that's totally different. And if you want to sell that like unique variant on a Magic card on eBay and you want to it's an open market. If people want to buy it, as long as it's not recognized as a real card.
You can't, you can't even sell that. So that's also illegal. What you can do is play with it. And like the proxy proxy MTG guy, I forget his exact Twitter, the proxy guy.
Yeah.
Gives away. He does really cool artwork on it. You can play with these cool looking cards. The issue is not playing with them. The issue is selling them. And the issue is tricking people into buying cards they think are real that are fake. That's where the counterfeit issue becomes its hardest, because it's not about, oh, I don't, my commander deck, I don't want to buy a foil Gaia's Cradle because they're really expensive, but here I'm playing with a grayed out printed black and white version, or even a like cool one my friend with really cool Photoshop skills did, where he made the like the life pod from Guardians of the Galaxy into a Gaia Cradle or a Gaia's Cradle looking card. So
big shout to Travis Nestor, who just said his earlier comment wasn't meant to do anything other than play devil's advocate. I relate to you, man. The show started today, and a lot of the conversation is centered around sort of this idea that just because you're of sound mind and you love Magic and you respect it, it's still okay to ask those questions. I think it's important to ask those questions, because to truly eradicate the problem, we have to get full community support. So people that are smart, that don't want to have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. Like if you play Commander, Underground Sea is priced out if you are just a regular working stiff. It's $1,200.
Yeah, but you also don't need to play Underground Sea in Commander. There's, like, no deck is better than 1%. And that's even, I would say, an extreme. Like, I think your deck is better by 0.3% by playing an Underground Sea, excluding corner cases where you're playing stuff like High Tide, where you need that island card type. But even then, I would say you don't need it.
And if, I mean, for Legacy, for Vintage, the duels, I get it. They're really, really expensive. So it's a reasonable concern.
But
that
that's why Legacy isn't really support. Vintage is not supported as far as tournament play does, and Legacy is barely supported except for special events where you get 1 to 2 GPs a year because people love the format, and you get 1 Pro Tour in my lifetime.
Totally.
And by lifetime, I mean since I started playing Magic. Like, this last Pro Tour that had Legacy in it, and it was a team event where technically one player didn't need to play. You know, you had 2 other players that were doing it, so if you were one teammate that couldn't afford it, or between 3 players, you couldn't put together that amount of cards to borrow from your group of friends. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I have stopped playing Legacy pretty much entirely.
Well, that's why Modern was created. This podcast exists because Legacy, and that's a reserve list issue, which we've discussed isn't going away.
And we were both Legacy players prior to Modern's existence. We both played Legacy in tournaments.
Best SCG format finish was Legacy.
Pox, yeah. It's a super fun format, but it's just, you know, like, it's not a supportable format from Wizards' perspective. It's just not. They can't.
And the issue with making fakes for Legacy, because you see this argument a lot where it's, oh, but we'll just make fakes of reserve list cards. We won't touch any of the cards they're printing right now, is, and I know this is like slippery slope fallacy, but it's literally happening. You can go to these groups and they're asking for current cards that are worth $15 to be proxied up that are modern staple cards or even standard staple cards, because they've now gotten used to just buying proxies and these guys don't really care. And so they're going through the process of making these fakes for any card they want that has value. There are a ton of fake Teferi cards out there because he's worth $40 and in standard, and people need him for standard. And that's where the problem is. People say they're going to stop at the reserve list, but they don't.
Of course they don't. Of course they don't. If you're willing to make a fake Magic card, why would the ethics involved with any level stop you from doing it further?
Right, right.
Like,
And so then the next, this is what Travis Nestor's original comment was, and he was playing devil's advocate to establish. And his point isn't that wrong or wrong to ask is, what about the idea of counterfeits existing to be a driving force between Wizards of the Coast to reassess the reprint policy? What the counterfeit market is going to do to Wizards is force them to go and litigate against these factories and these companies making them. It's not, the reprint policy isn't being decided by these counterfeit market prices. What will do that is speaking out, talking, you know, being loud on social media, talking to us during the podcast, being on stream, because we are telling the world Wizards of the Coast should be doing master sets at $7 and having other content creators talk about it. You have a lot talking about right now Modern is too expensive.
On top of which, maybe this is wrong, and maybe I don't know what I'm talking about here, but as somebody who definitely works around original IP and products, and we deal with lawsuits, like we see people rip our stuff off.
Yeah.
This is a thing that's getting enough attention. Hasbro is an enormous company.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to go to prison if this is like it's not going to go in their favor.
Right.
This is a Fortune 500 company with a lot of money, and there's not enough money to be made on these proxies to justify the risk that's eventually going to the bottom's going to fall out.
Right.
It's going to have to.
Well, the issue isn't proxies. You know, we're bringing this up a lot, and the point is, do you want to try out your Modern deck? kitchen table and testing to see if you want to play it or if you want to try a card. Like, oh, I want to see if Chalice of the Void is good in Merfolk. I don't want to buy a Chalice of the Void because this is an off-the-ball idea and that card's really expensive, but it could be good in the deck. Let me test with my friends and see if it's even worth it for this tournament.
No problems with Sharpie proxies in your home. That's a thing that we do when we test decks.
Right.
That's different.
Even like I would even say color-printed out pieces of paper that you cut out and slide in front of a card. Like, the point is the moment it becomes a card that you could trick someone into thinking is real, and or the moment you try tricking people into thinking it's real to play in a tournament is the moment that it goes from trying something out to theft. And any card that is trying to look like a real card is doing that.
Yep.
Even if you don't mean to, even if you're just like, I just want I like the look of real cards. I want my cards to look real. Like, do something that looks bad. Because what if you lose your collection or you accidentally put that card in your trade binder and you like can't tell that this Arid Mesa is the real one and this one's the fake one, and you accidentally trade it to your friend, and now that friend gets DQ'd from a GP 3 months later, and like that can even steamroll, like, and that friend's really good at Magic and eventually gets on the Pro Tour and becomes a Hall of Fame person. You're like, oh, that guy got DQ'd for fake cards 10 years ago.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Not going to be a Hall of Fame member. So you're doing that to your friends. You're removing the Hall of Fame ability.
That's you.
Dragus Keller, they could print them in sealed product that are mass produced. They've done that. They do that in commander decks. Like, this commander set specifically was probably not the best one. And there's issues with it. And you can go to the Command Zone episode, our sister podcast, that literally talks about that last week. So we definitely recommend that, where they go into kind of, was M19 a failure of a product? Or not M19, Commander 19.
Yeah.
And go to them for that, because that they know better than we do. Michael Grothy sent me the Facebook link that I put in the thing. Lucas Dywald says, what's up?
What's up, Lucas?
There's a Saffron Olive article that's listed. Yeah, I think those are kind of the main point.
Reading chat.
Someone brought up the point that, like, if casuals are the only ones proxying or faking Magic cards, it doesn't matter because they don't buy a bunch of product. And then... Ken Your Dome, I'm never going to pronounce people's names. I don't know why I'm in charge of reading people's names off the chat. Mentioned that, like, the casual market is the largest kind of purchaser of Magic cards on the planet right now, and has always been. And so those are the exact people you don't want to be kind of doing this.
Yeah, yep. I agree. So let's rally
yeah,
behind
the episode. Yeah.
As an issue, this is something that as a community we need to stand against.
Only you can prevent counterfeiters.
Yeah, agreed. So that's going to wrap us up, guys. If you want to follow along, you can follow me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at the MMCast. I'm at Kes Wiley. The podcast is at the MMCast.
Yep. And as we mentioned, check out the Facebook group. Please subscribe on YouTube, guys. It's a huge thing that's going to help us keep this thing going. If you're watching this streaming live, subscribe. If you're hearing this, go just find us and subscribe, guys. Gigantic stuff coming for us in the near future. We're going to be adding additional shows, a lot of really cool stuff here. And then, you know, follow me on Twitch, Ben Bateman Streaming, because I'll be streaming my fun brew soon.
And congratulations to Trevor Gordon, awesome Arid Mesa, plus you got an extra pack out of it. Make sure to message us on the Facebook page. So go to the facebook.com/TheMMCast, message us there. There's a private message option.
Yeah.
That way we can get to you. If you don't have Facebook, there's Twitter. If you don't have that, if you want to email us at marketing@kest.co, but that gets checked so much less than those other two things. So try to do those other two things.
Yep.
I think, can you private message on YouTube?
I don't know.
Maybe that.
All right, guys. Thanks for watching. Same time, same place next week. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to themmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.